Good morning to you, Ray.
Good morning, Jack.
You know, we feature a lot of violent crimes, cases that involve violence on the show. But every now and then, just as a change of pace, we do a financial crime. Is that called white-collar crime?
Oh, yes. You can call it white-collar crime, financial crimes. They're becoming more and more common.
Yeah.
They're difficult to investigate because you got to do a lot of accounting kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's very interesting because the prosecutors in our office have to become experts. Well, I don't know about experts, but you have to become very well acquainted with some of these things, just mm-hmm. like detectives when they're assigned to the financial crimes unit. They have to, first of all, they need the aptitude to deal with numbers and that sort of thing, but right. they also have to have an interest in it, and it's not the go out to the murder scene kind of thing. And we have a case today involving a lawyer who ended up stealing from some of his clients, and ultimately he ended up being prosecuted and pleading guilty. But we get frequently the way these things occur is you have somebody who will call you up and say, I have an employee that I think that has been stealing from me. And what we do is listen a little. And, you know, Andrea Williams, who's been sure. On the show a number of times, kind of is the point person for us on financial crimes. And so she typically will listen to the allegations that somebody has. And then if she thinks it sounds like something, then she'll arrange a meeting with a detective with the financial crimes unit. And then we sit down and with that person that's called and the detective and one of the prosecutors in our office, and then they share the story with the detective, and the detective then begins the process of investigation. And that's kind of what happened in this case. Dan Laren is the prosecutor in this case, and Jody Stowers used to be the detective. Now he's become a big deal with the police department. He's been promoted, and in order to be promoted and become a sergeant, they immediately put you back on the street, and he has to go to work at 4 o'clock and doesn't get off till when?
2 a.m.
Yeah. So,
and they call that a promotion?
Yeah.
Somewhat one.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Dan, tell us how this first, give us a little bit of an introduction into how this case came about.
Well, this particular case started at the Lexington Police Department. I recall talking to Detective Stowers about it because, as you say, this is not something that a lot of us deal with on a regular basis. This involves a number of real estate transactions that didn't work out. And
this guy was a lawyer.
That's right.
Right? And right. So how did that work?
Well, he owned a title company here in Lexington. And basically, and I freely admit to not being an expert in this area, but his responsibility was to hold the money for these transactions in escrow, which is to say the people that were going to buy this real estate would send him the money. He was supposed to hold on to it and then pay the seller of the real estate when the transaction closed. And what happened in a number of these...
Now, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. There are some legal requirements that lawyers are supposed to keep when they have an escrow account. And that means they get their client's money and they hold
Absolutely.
It in escrow to be paid for whatever legal requirements that they're to be paid for.
Absolutely.
Now, and if you don't keep that separate from your personal account, or if you use that money for personal business, then you're violating, first of all, you're violating the law, but second of all, you're violating ethical rules that have been set up by the the Kentucky Bar Association, and their laws and their rules and that sort of thing.
That's absolutely correct. When you pass the bar in Kentucky, the first thing that they do is you have to go to what's called a new lawyer's orientation, and you sit through 2 days of training from the Kentucky Bar Association, And I went through it.
Great opportunity to catch up on your sleep.
A lot of it doesn't apply to prosecutors. But the two things I remember, I sat there for 2 days with a number of civil attorneys, and the two things I remember are return your client's phone calls and don't spend your client's money from your escrow account. And so at a very basic level, that's what the lawyer is responsible for, keeping that money in trust to be used for the purpose for which his clients gave to him. And in this case, that didn't happen.
Okay, so this is how did you hear about the case?
Well, it came through the district court like most of our cases do. And because this was a unique case, I do recall talking to Andrea about it. But Detective Stowers called me and said, I got kind of an interesting case for you. And I remember he came over to our office and we sat down and we talked about it. And I remember we sort of looked at each other because, you know, we're used to chasing copper thieves and check kiters and, you know, murderers and that kind of thing. And this is a white-collar case. This is a lawyer who was dealing with other attorneys and other corporate transactions. And so we began to work on this case a little harder as far as doing research than the typical case that comes through our office.
So, Jody, how did this all come to your attention?
Probably late 2010, started receiving some reports about the same time in the financial crimes unit from three different companies, I think Beltway Capital, Empire Midwest, and Capital Equity, stating that they had dealings with Mr. Branham. They sent money over him to hold an escrow. When they went to purchase some properties for clients, those checks bounced. From Mr. Branham.
Was that three separate calls not related to each other?
Three separate reports.
So then you have that, if there's smoke, there's fire possibility.
Exactly. And in the end, there was a fourth company that came up as well.
Okay, so what were they doing? These were real estate investment companies?
These were real estate investment companies from all over the United States. They would, clients, average citizens, we're looking to buy property, and we actually had an individual victim from Australia that was involved in this as well. They would pay these companies, they would put the money in there for these companies to go purchase the property for them. Well, these companies,
an investment,
and these companies would then put this money in escrow, put it in Mr. Branham's escrow account, and he was entrusted to hold it for them. And when they were ready to make the purchase for the properties, he was to cut the check. To make the purchase.
How much money were you talking about?
Well, in the end, it looks like it's probably around $240,000. But
a lot
split
of
between four. Yeah, they range from $27,000 to, I believe, $95,000 was a high amount.
At the time that you, I know you've been promoted, but at the time were financial crimes your bailiwick? Was that your thing?
That's where I worked at the time, but yeah. Of course I had a background. I came from robbery homicide, and then I worked residential burglary.
I see.
And then coming over here, it was a big change.
So yeah, there was a learning curve in there.
Yes, definitely, because I'm used to working cases where somebody breaks in a house or sticks a gun in somebody's face and demands money. So this was totally different.
Well, so what do? You get these complaints. So tell me what you do as a investigator.
Well, I was stumped at first, and that's why I enlisted the help of the Commonwealth Attorney's Office, because I really didn't know where to go. I didn't know if this was a civil matter. At first, I was kind of confused. I was like, well, is this a business deal, just a bad business deal? Is it actually civil, or is it criminal? And that's why I called Andrea and Dan and got their help, because I really didn't know where to go. I didn't know anything about escrow.
You guys might want to pop those headphones on. We have a caller here. This is Mike. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, tell us about yourself, Mike.
Yeah, so I'm actually I'm the in-house lawyer for one of Mr. Branham's victims for Beltway Capital. We're a real estate investment company based here in Baltimore, and we purchase mortgages and real estate assets all around the country. We operate solely here from Baltimore. We don't have offices anywhere else, and we rely on attorneys and title companies all around the country in local jurisdictions to help us with these transactions. And in particular, when we're dealing with attorneys, who we don't know very well, we rely on them complying with those rules of ethics that you all were just talking about. Mr. Branham caused us to suffer about a $60,000 loss here, it's a meaningful amount of money for us. And I know that there's some other individuals that also suffered big losses, but we're not in the business of just letting people steal money from us.
You know, Jack, I'm going to give you hang on, Mike, but I'm going to give you a statistic. Did you know that businesses that lose $10,000 to $20,000 a year in an instance, 80% of them are forced to go out of business?
Is that right?
Yeah, and so when a loss, $60,000 loss can be a devastator.
Hey, Mike, can you hang with us for a minute?
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Okay, I'm gonna lock you in here. So you just stay there. When we come back, you'll be live with us, so you jump in whenever you want to. We'll take this opportunity to take a break, take a time out, 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T, toll-free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, email jackpatty@wblkam.com. We really are dealing with a cast of thousands that continues to grow this morning. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson is in the studio with us, for those of you who just joined us, along with Assistant Commonwealth's Attorney Dan Lahren, and also Sergeant Jody Stowers, who investigated the case we're talking about. It involved a local attorney who pled guilty and was sent to prison for spending his client's escrow funds for his own purposes. And we have a couple of attorneys now on the line, Ray, who represented some of the people that this lawyer stole money from. We have Mike. Is it T. Dunn? How do you pronounce your last name, Mike?
It's Mike Padone. Nobody gets it right. It's all right.
Padone?
Right.
Mike Padone. And you're in Pittsburgh?
No, we're in Baltimore. Beltway Capital.
Okay, Beltway Capital, and that was your client. Now let's go to, this is John Wheeler. John, good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us your story, John.
Well, it's a long, long story.
Well, we're looking for the cliff notes.
The short version, yeah. Right.
The cliff notes is that we entrusted an escrow company to handle our funds. And we found out that in Kentucky, there's really no rules or regulations underneath escrow officers. And he used our funds as his own personal piggy bank. And that's my short story, sir.
How much money was involved in your situation, John?
Ours was $163,000, and we minimized our exposure by actually driving to Kentucky and taking Cliff to the bank, and he shelled out about $60,000 there, and he took it out of a bank account. We could never tell you about where he got the money from. At the end of the day, he ended up owing us about $100,000. That he took from our company.
Where are you? Where are you located?
Well, right now I'm in Houston, Texas, but I work and operate out of Kansas City, Missouri.
Okay, so you made what you call a road trip over here and found your good and close friend Cliff Branham and took him to the bank, so to speak.
We physically drove him there. He was not wanting to go, but Cliff had all these excuses about why the bank was changing their escrow numbers and his bank numbers, and finally he, hopped in a car with us, and we drove to City National Bank there in Kentucky.
Wow, really? No kidding. They talk about tap dancing.
I like that. Now, Dan, this Cliff Branham, Clifford Branham, was charged with four counts of what?
We charged him with theft by failure to make required disposition.
Now, what does that mean? What do you have to prove to do that?
Well, it's a form of theft. We have to prove that he unlawfully took property, but the required disposition part is where he had a known obligation to deal with that property in a particular way. We do that with cases sometimes where people hire home repair companies to do fix their roofs or something like that, and the people take the money and run off. In this particular case, he had a legal requirement to hold that money, use it for the real estate transactions, and instead He failed to do that and use the money for his own purposes.
So, at any rate, so that you get these complaints, Jody. Now, tell us what you did to investigate this thing, other than talk to Andrea and Dan.
Well, I compiled the reports, and what I say is I talked to Andrea, and she got me his bank records. That was key to this whole thing, is subpoenaing his bank records to see where the money came in at and see where the money went to. And that was a big factor in this case, to see that this money went to pay for other things that should have been paid for.
All right, we're going to take a break. If you have questions or comments, you're welcome to call us at 253-5959. Touch star 590 from AT&T, toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, or email jackpatty@wvlkam.com. Very interesting case this morning. Of course, Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson with us, Assistant Commonwealth's Attorney Dan Lahren, who prosecuted this case. Jody Stowers, Sergeant with the Police Department here in Lexington, who investigated the case. And a couple of attorneys that represented the companies that were ripped off in this case. We've got Mike Padone in Baltimore and John Wheeler in Houston. And guys on the phone, you're open, so anytime you want to jump in during this discussion, feel free, Ray.
John, Dan was telling me that I want to talk to you a little bit about the kind of impact. I mentioned earlier that businesses go out of business because they suffer losses 80% of the time. Now, you all suffered some problems as a result of this scoundrel, didn't you?
Absolutely. I'm 33 years old, sir, and being that young and losing $100,000 was like losing my life savings, my own bank account. And by this guy spreading out his lies and taking this money from my company, about put me into bankruptcy. I had, of course, debtors I couldn't pay, construction I could not finish. Yet our company thought it was the best position to deliver the deeds to the clients we sold the homes to. You know, I didn't get compensated for the houses, but I still did the right thing and deeded the properties over to the people who bought the houses, where Cliff stole the money from. Okay, I traded the deeds without compensation. So it was kind of a double-bladed sword. We gave away the house, and we never got compensated. It crippled us. It about put me into bankruptcy. If we didn't rally through it and work hard and stay together as a group, our company would have fell apart.
Well, one of the things that you have to deal with, the people that invest in you trust you to make the right decisions, and this has to shake a little bit of the confidence that folks have in you.
Well, it did. It shook a lot of confidence people had in me. You know, when you think you're going into business with a title company, and that's what I just wanted to call in and make sure people, you know, get a good sense of, is make sure you know who you're doing business with. Make sure that they have the proper E&O insurance licenses. That's a simple insurance that every person who holds escrow money should have. In this case, Cliff Branham, he didn't have insurance. Otherwise, I would have been made whole. You know, just there is no regulation with the title insurance industry if you do not check and verify. So if we'd have just verified and checked this man was insured, we would have found out instantly that he didn't pay his insurance premium. But, you know, just one of them slippery slopes that we took as a business.
John, you had a comment too, sir?
And Mike.
I'd like to speak for a minute on this confidence issue. I mean, we were fortunate that the loss we suffered here didn't bring our business to the brink the way it did Mr. Wheeler's, and I admire his handling of that. But you know, I think the other impact, there's the obvious financial impact here, but I think that the other thing that I'd point out is that there's also an impact on the confidence of businesses like ours in the way a case like this is going to be handled in a particular place. And as I said before, we do business all over the country. And one of the things that influences our decision to do business in a particular locality is how law enforcement and prosecutors are going to handle a case like this, whether or not they're going to look at a $60,000 loss and say, you know what, we got a million other serious, you know, a serious, you know, real crimes. We can't be chasing things like this that we think are basically a civil matter. And so there is a direct impact on the economic development in your community as a result of how you choose to handle a case like this. And I will tell you that had Mr. Larson's office and Mr. Laren and the detectives involved here, had they not pursued this case the way they did, it would have absolutely influenced our decision to not do business in Kentucky, or in particular in Lexington again. And the fact that they did handle it the way they did will make us more confident the next time we're faced with an investment opportunity there. And so I think you need to understand that there is this much broader impact on the economic development in your community when these things arise.
Now, I want to thanks. You know, I always like Mike.
Right. Right.
So, Jody, you interviewed this deadbeat. Tell us a little bit about that interview.
Well, I asked him to come down. Came down, did the standard, read him his Miranda warnings. Of course, him being a lawyer, he knew all about that. Of course, he was mainly a civil lawyer, but he agreed to talk to me. Of course, he had answers for everything. But when I pushed him a little bit further, I asked him, you know, the proof's right there in the records. What did you spend that money on? And he agreed that he spent that money from his escrow account, which he should not have done, to make payroll. Just to purchase anything. I think I saw something there maybe for a gym membership. I can't remember, but just simple things like that.
So he used it as his own personal account is what he did.
Exactly.
Dan, so you got this case and you got four counts. So how are you going to deal with this thing?
Well, when the case came to circuit court first, we went to the grand jury, we got our indictment, and he had an attorney representing him who I believe was a friend of his from law school. And we talked about the case. It went on several months, and then he explained to the judge that he didn't understand how the plea bargaining process worked, and he had to get a different lawyer. So we wound up getting another attorney, and we started all over again, and the case continued to go through. Mr. Brandon made a number of promises to us about paying restitution, and this is not uncommon in financial crime cases.
It's also not uncommon when you're in the process of the case being active. They'll say darn near anything, so go ahead.
And so as the case progressed, we entered an order for him to pay restitution. He told us through his attorney that he had some sort of transaction in the works. And I talked to the people that were involved in the case, in particular Mr. Wheeler, who's on the phone, and he told me how Mr. Branham had been making similar promises to all of his clients for the past year or 2 years, nothing ever came of that. So eventually in December of last year, he pled guilty, and he agreed that he had misspent these escrow funds, and he asked for some more time to make more payments.
How much restitution does he owe right now?
It's just over $240,000.
How much has he made?
Not a dime.
Not a dime.
He hasn't paid anything.
Is he in prison now?
He is. As of yesterday, he is at the Roederer Adjustment Center, which is the first stop for everyone that's serving prison time here in Kentucky. They'll classify him and send him to another correctional facility. I have no idea where that'll be.
Yeah. Well, but he still owes the money.
Absolutely.
And it's, restitution is almost a joke these days, and so... John and Mike, you guys expecting to get any money out of this Yardbird?
Well, not at this point. I don't know how he's going to pay me from prison. He's not going to get paid much for making license plates. So, you know, we're very conflicted about this. We'd like to see the guy locked away for the rest of his natural life, but we know there's definitely no chance we're going to get paid if that happens. So, you know, as you said, it is almost a joke.
Well, he's been disbarred, Jody tells me. So the chances of him being a lawyer are non-existent.
We're going to take a break here. What was he sentenced to? What time?
8 years.
8 years now.
Oh.
What? Okay, I'll hold it till after the break. You know what's coming. 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590. And we are back. We're going to wrap this thing up. We've got a cast of thousands in the studio, Commonwealth, in the studio and on the phone. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson, Assistant Commonwealth Attorney Dan Laren, also Sergeant Jody Stowers with the Police Department here in Lexington. We have Mike and John, who are attorneys, and they are on the phone with us. And before the break, he was sentenced to 8 years, Dan. And so that means that this man will not see the light of day for 8 years.
Well, that's the theory anyway. Mr. Branham did not spend any time in custody prior to his guilty plea and his sentencing. And then he was sentenced to serve 8 years. He went to the detention center. He spent a couple of months there, and then he went to Roeder, where he'll be sent to further on down the line for corrections.
Well, see, Dan is a gentleman.
Right. Why don't you answer that question?
I'm not.
Right?
Let me answer.
Are we going to have shock probation here?
Well, shock probation is when you've spent 60 days or up to 180, I think, that the judge, in this case is Judge Ishmael, can what they call shock probate this guy, which means that the theory is that you go to prison and you're so shocked by your circumstances that you will never, ever violate the do right doctrine in the future. And it happens, and it's infuriating to victims when this happens. And even if it doesn't happen, our wimpy sentencing laws... this guy is a 20% guy. That means if he's sentenced to 8 years, he's eligible to talk to the parole board in about 1.5 years. Think about that.
Yeah, but now, Mike and John, would you rather him be shock probated so he can get back to work?
You know, that's a funny question. You know, we're not going to see any money from him. I'd rather him spend all 8 years pushing uniforms and convict jumpsuits. There's nothing I'd more rather to see. I've already wrote the money off.
Yeah.
I'd rather see him do all the time.
Well, I don't know. Right. I mean, yeah. Because how's he going to pay us back if he does get it? Is he just going to? I mean, is he going to go steal from other people? I'd rather have him be somebody's girlfriend in prison.
Now, shame on you.
I can't believe you said that.
Yeah, that's right. Well, but that's where we are in the great scheme of things, and it's financial crimes are important to us here. And we had, as you know, Jack, Andrea Williams has been on our show a lot, and and she's really tuned into this and has caused the rest of us to get in line behind her. And so we're sorry it happened to somebody from anywhere, but primarily we don't like the idea that somebody comes to our town to try to do some good and end up getting stolen from.
Yeah.
And if it does happen, we take all of these kind of things very seriously. Financial crimes are a big deal to us because it's not just the investment companies like Mike and John represent, but Dan mentioned it's some little old lady who some character comes up and says, well, you need a new roof or it's going to collapse on you in 20 minutes. And here, give me $2,500 so I can go buy the shingles. And next thing you know, he's down the road.
Right, and that happens a lot, doesn't it?
A lot.
Yeah.
And it's and people are embarrassed to bring that to our attention a lot of times,
right.
But they should.
Mike and John, we thank you for being here. Do you guys have anything to say in conclusion?
No, I appreciate you having me, and I would just once again, I'd say we really do appreciate all the work that was done by Mr. Laren and everybody else in his office and all the detectives. It's greatly appreciated.
Thank you.
My only words I'd say is no shock probation, Dan. Get in there. Make sure this guy spends his time. Don't shock the victims.
Okay. Thank you guys very much. That's not your call, though, is it, Dan?
No.
Right, unfortunately.
That will be the judge's decision. When we got ready for the sentencing in this case, in addition to the financial proof of the damage that was done here, I asked the victims in this case to send letters or emails or other messages to the judge, and in particular, Mr. Wheeler did The thing that he said that really struck me, and I did mention this to the judge, is that he said if Branham had used a gun and walked into a bank and stole $240,000, the community would be up in arms, and he would go to prison, and no one would think twice about it.
Good
but
point.
Because he used a law degree and his business background to steal that money, everybody had some second thoughts and was thinking it maybe was a civil suit or were worried about restitution. And when it comes down to it, it's a theft.
It's a theft, right?
That's right.
And if do people get shock probation more often in these financial kind of crimes than they would in other crimes, or do you know?
My instinct would be yes, because what he's going to say is what he said at sentencing is the same thing. I can't make restitution if I'm incarcerated. And Branham does not have a criminal record, which is maybe different from some of the bank robber types we deal with.
Right.
So it would not surprise me that the court goes that way when the time comes.
Well, the question is, if he doesn't pay restitution once he's out, is he going to revoke probation, or if he gets paroled and he has to make restitution, is that going to be revoked? And unfortunately, given this, like I said, Jack, I mean that the legislature does not want people sent to prison, particularly property criminals.
And we've heard crooked politicians and people that do these white-collar crimes go to so-called country clubs to do their time. Is there such a thing as the country club prison?
Yeah, it's called Blackburn.
Really?
Here. Yeah. It's that the interns that we have in the summertime take a tour of Blackburn out here, mm-hmm. minimum security thing, and guess what? They call it Camp Blackburn. It's like summer camp, they think. And that's the one people walk away from.
Right.
Yeah.
You hear that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's, any rate, shock probation, Judge Ishmael probably will get a motion that he'll have to consider for shock probation, and we intend to be there and oppose it. So there you go.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks very much.
Have a great weekend. Stand by. We have an update from ABC. If you're listening to WVLK AM.